You're listening to AM 970, The Answer. And now, Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, the president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. A very special guest. He's back once again, former governor of New York State, David Paterson. Welcome back to Reaching Out.
Greg, it's always great to be back here. I used to work right in the studio, even at AM 97, The Answer, briefly, and with another station. But when I used to come here, I used to sit on your side of the desk. So, you know, now you're pitching and I'm fielding the questions.
Well, every time you come, we learn something new. I remember our last discussion, to remind listeners, we talked about the effects of where jobs are going, and you made a very valid point, and it's very good. People and our listeners understand our jobs aren't going away. Nobody's giving away jobs. It's technology that's coming in, and that's where the jobs are going.
Yeah, I mean, you can get on the phone and call the bank. You can talk to people for a half an hour. You haven't spoken to a human being yet. And there's a belief that in the next 10 years, that artificial intelligence will take 7 million jobs out of our economy. And as I probably expressed the last time, no matter what your political leaning is, none of the candidates, when they ran in 2016, talked about it. Not once. And they kept talking about how they were going to create jobs, but they didn't tell you how we were going to change our society when we lose these jobs to machines.
Yes, and I'm tell you, I could attest to that. Here's something rude awakening. Everything is direct deposit, mostly. I have not seen a bank teller in years. So I happened to get a check and go to the bank, got a check, went to the bank, Amalgamated Bank. So I go to Amalgamated Bank. I start asking for the people who used to work there. I said, used to work there, because I hadn't been in a year, and all the tellers that I knew retired. Nobody knew who I was. So that was a rude awakening. I said, Greg, you know, this service is probably going to go away because nobody's getting a check. You get a debit card, you get your money deposited directly into the bank. You go to the machine, you get your money out. You talk to nobody, you see nobody.
And now, of course, you drive around the city, you go through the tolls, there's nobody there. It's being recorded, your license plate when you go through. You get the bill at the end of the month. But there's a whole lot of people out of work that used to be standing there taking your money for you. And the types of situations where this is happening. Now, Greg, they're talking about restaurants where you go in, you punch out on a keypad, and maybe one person will bring the food out for you. Even the restaurants are going to be automated. Now, I still think there's something nice about being in a restaurant and the atmosphere. Yes. And you have a little rapport with the person who's waiting on you, but even those things are going away, and the fast food places are automating as we speak.
Yeah, McDonald's is doing that, and I went there, and I said, you know what, I want this, but the machine, I can't figure out how to get it, and then finally I just take my card out, go to the register, wait on the long line, and say, this is what I want, and then I get it. And I said, I can't figure out these pictures, and plus one, plus two, what if you want something special?
And the question is, how are we going to adjust our society to this? For instance, maybe we need to move to a four-day work week. That way we could employ more people. We'd still have five working days, but everyone would work four of them. And, you know, maybe we have to create longer vacations. We've got to think of ways to increase the number of people who are in a workforce that only tops out at a certain number of jobs, far less than were there before.
Yeah, this is something going into the future, and I just want I'm closer to my pension check than I want to think, so I just want to make sure that keeps flowing, and I don't get a letter saying, Mr. Floyd, your pension is being cut because there's no funding there.
Yeah, I'm already there, Greg, so.
Yeah, so, right, look, we're both in the same boat coming up, but we want to talk about campaigns, including the Cuomo campaign. Let's talk about the Cuomo campaign, Cuomo and Cynthia Nixon race, and Crowley. How does that affect the Cuomo race?
Well, maybe I'm just in the minority of at least people who are giving a point of view, I just don't think that Cynthia Nixon has done anything except be critical of some situations that have been involved the governor. But it's the governor who gave us the $15 minimum wage. It's the governor who has brought to our state an economic plan that is employing a lot of people. He's followed up on the Minority and Women's Business Enterprise program that I didn't start it, but it was nowhere when I got there, and he's taken it much further. And so in all the areas where you would want there to be assistance of paid family leave for workers, I just don't even see how someone could maximize beyond where he's been able to go. Now, I think there is a move afoot to have far more progressive candidates in primaries, and the candidate in Queens was able to unseat Congressman Crowley. And I know Congressman Crowley, and I'd like to say I'm a friend of his. He even played in a band that I used to buy the albums called The Crown Heights Affair back in the late 70s.
Did he play in The Crown Heights
he
Affair?
He played in The Crown Heights Affair.
How
do you like
that?
He played guitar.
Wow.
And he used to play the guitar some nights, you know, in Albany. We'd all go and listen to him. They'd had a little band of legislators that were a band. But Crowley had a problem that a lot of people have had. He made the best choices for his family. He lives in Virginia. The school systems are better. He took them down there. His wife's down there. Everybody's down there. And he comes back to the district from time to time. Now, he still lives in Queens, but he's just not there enough. And when you're an elected official that's not in the neighborhood enough, they say politics is local. And this is an example of it. This woman got herself together and organized a pocket of the district that turned out a huge vote. The rest of the districts turned out like no vote, like 7%. And she accumulated enough to beat him and now become the new Congress member from that district. And years ago, Tom Daschle, who was the minority leader of the U.S. Senate, was beaten in a primary because sometimes it's hard to be in Washington and cover the home base. It's very difficult for those senators who live way out west, like Daschle did. But even from Washington to Queens, there can be a lot going on when you're out of town. And I think that explained that victory more than the fact that the party is going more progressive. I think the party is going more progressive, but I don't think that's what caused that loss.
Well, that's a good analogy, and I understand that. But I wanted to bring up 3 points since we were naming the governor's accomplishments. Infrastructure.
Totally.
Gun laws.
I forgot about that.
And marriage equality.
And marriage equality, which I didn't forget, but I forgot to say.
Right, right. So those are three more things that the governor has done. So what you're saying is we have a competent governor that's progressive in doing things. And I can understand people acting, but why go for another actor? We got one in the White House. We don't need one right here in New York State, because then we'll be finished.
Well, she didn't like this, but I had made this public statement that why would she have her campaign announcement on film? We know she can act. I would have, if I were her, I would have had my campaign announcement in front of a group of people to show that I can hang out with the people. You know, you can look good on the screen, but what are you doing on the scene?
Oh,
and I don't think that Ms. Nixon has done that. And then her response to me was, men are always telling women to wait in the back of the line, and I'm not waiting anymore. The reality is, I'm not telling her to wait in anywhere. It's just that there are a lot of women who work very hard who I would see is in front of her. Senator Gillibrand could run for governor. Kathy Hochul, lieutenant governor, could run for governor. We have Tish James and Leisha Eve running against each other for attorney general. One of them might win, and one day one of them might be the governor. There are women all over the place who have ability, and I want to know why she thinks she should be in front of them.
Why should she start with a city council race? You could go run for city council.
Because it's not Hollywood. You know, Hollywood, you start at the top. You know,
there we go. And we know somebody who started at the top is about to bring the whole world down.
Yeah, well, you know.
There's an example.
for a man who talks about America first, when I heard that press conference early in the week, it sounded like make Russia great again.
Yeah, I thought he was a Russian citizen. Yeah, I mean, he got on the football players for not pledging allegiance to the flag. How about not pledging allegiance to your country?
I mean, totally. And look, I could understand, because I try to look at other people's point of view, that he thinks the investigation is invalid when it comes to him. He doesn't think he was involved. And he has a right to think that.
Sure.
But how do you ignore mounds of evidence, not only combined by the Obama administration, but George W. Bush before him, that Russia interferes in elections? They took over Kiev. They took over Crimea. They shot down a plane with 300 passengers on it a few years ago near Crimea. Now they've made a deal with Germany to try to pull them away from the other countries in NATO. And here's the president cheering them on and saying he was very strong and when he said that Russia didn't involve themselves in our elections. Come on, Donald. I know you're president right now, but you used to hang out right here in New York. You can tell the difference between someone who's loud and strong and someone who's got character and is telling the truth. And Putin is not telling the truth.
Well, I don't know what Putin has on him, what Putin threatened him with, or how Putin helped him. But there's something there that he doesn't want the rest of us to know. It's got to be. Otherwise, the other thing is, I got to say, when they give him his physical examination, we may find out that there's something wrong with him.
I don't think there's anything wrong with him any more than that. I think there's something wrong with a lot of people who voted for him. But I do think that it's a mystery why he would act this way and compromise our own defense system and our intelligence agencies right in front of the whole world. And while he was doing it, Putin was sitting there basically glaring at him, almost like, if you don't say these things, I'm not even going to stay here and have a meeting with you. It was totally late.
He swaggered up there like he was my 16-year-old son after he just did something he got away with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That swag, I say. And then he came in and started speaking right away. My experience, you come to a meeting late, you listen for 15, 20 minutes before you give your opinion.
Right.
So we wanted to talk about the Supreme Court decision on union dues. I know you know something about that.
So on its face, I'm sure the judges who voted for it in an equitable way could say that if a person wasn't in the union, that they shouldn't have to pay union dues. But the reality is that even if you're not in the union, you're enjoying the benefits of what the union fights for. And the reason I think the decision is wrong is because you have to look at public policy. You have to look at who is going to gain and lose from these decisions. So my example is, suppose, Greg, you had a company, you have five employees.
Yes.
And you pay them all $50,000 a year. Well, now one of them, the Supreme Court decision comes down, and you and one of the employees are pretty tight. So you say to the guy, hey, listen, get out the union. I'll give you an extra $5,000 a year. Guy gets out the union. Now you're paying him $55,000 and the other's $50,000. Then they all realize if they get out, you're going to pay them an extra $5,000. So now everybody's making $55,000 a year, but there's no union. So now you lower the pay to 40, take it or leave it.
Yes.
So you spent $25,000, but now lowering everybody's pay afterward, you actually make 5 times 15, you make $75,000. I mean, this is the oldest trick in the book. You see it in malls. A retail store will move
yes,
in.
Sure.
There's a card store in the mall. They lower all the card prices, so everybody buys from them, drives the small store out of business, and then they raise the card prices in the retail store. And this is what's going to happen in unions. Everybody's going to think it's fashionable to get out of the union. Then once they bust the union, they can put the prices any way they want, and the worker will not have any recourse. Or as they say, when they come when it came from me, there was no one to help me. And I think it's a very injurious decision to the rights of workers in this country. And I think it's it is really turning the clock back on the rights of workers.
Now, of course, the workers, the employees, the union members, all they have to do is pay their union dues, which is not asking a lot, but you lose nothing. You gain, have everything to gain by staying in the union, because once that institution goes away, there's no one standing between you and the employer.
Right. And now the employer can set the price, and the union members have no recourse, because they're not members anymore. They're individuals. Divide and conquer.
Yes. And are you familiar with the ruling that you can't band together to have class action suits?
Well, that is another example of limiting the ability of the individual to see what makes class action suits effective is that everybody pays a little, and you have one lawsuit involving the class of people who were mistreated. If you make them all do it by themselves, you probably eliminated 80 to 90% of that group because they couldn't pay for the legal work they'd need to try to sue a big corporation. This is, choice is a very serious issue, and no one's taking it lightly, but there are a lot of other things that could happen with a new member of the Supreme Court. And I would say that the labor issues are right up there. There are individuals who have been spoiling for the chance to tear down some of the progress that's been made over the years. Did the pendulum sometimes swing in where the union was probably had more power than it should have? In some occasions, I would say that that's happened. But believe me, if we went back to what we had in the late 19th century and beginning of the 20th century, when people had to work 12-hour shifts and a 24-hour shift on Sunday, or then they'd get a day off the following Sunday. In this country, no child labor laws, excessive work. And even now, I have a friend who's a butcher. He has worked the last 43 days in a row at a store in Queens. I won't name it because he'll probably figure it out and fire it.
Right.
But it's going on even now. And it goes against what I think the principles of the founders of this country tried to elicit in the Constitution. Of course, they forgot about the slaves. But in many other ways, it's a great document. And we are literally taking it apart right before our very eyes.
And we always talk about the founding forefathers and the right to bear arms and everything else. But what you said is taking to the point. How do you see... who do you see that's a good candidate coming up for the future? Who would you say has a lot in a rising future, a bright future?
In presidential politics?
Presidential politics, yeah.
Well, we could start right here in New York State with Governor Cuomo, who, in addition to the progressive things he's done, added a new pension tier, Tier 6, lowered taxes to the point where they are lower than they were since the late 1940s. And so he can be very progressive, but astutely, to be that way, you've got to find ways to make sure that you're still generating revenues and you're still not spending to the point where you're putting your budget in deficit and inevitably near default. So I think he's a person to look at. I think the senator from Virginia, Mark Warner, has quietly been thinking about running. And then you have some people like Schultz, the probably the best thing that happened to him was when the two African-American men were waiting to have a meeting in his store and they weren't allowed to use the restroom, because it put a lot of the positive work he's done on the national stage. So there might even be some people from the entrepreneurial world or maybe even some people from the labor movement who might think at this point of going into elective politics, maybe wouldn't be in time for 2020. But for 2020, of course, the former Vice President Joe Biden is primed, and as long as his health holds out, could run against President Trump. And he could be a very interesting candidate because everybody loves him. Even the Republicans love him. He's a decent man. He's salt of the earth. He's one of the nicest people I ever met. And sometimes, you know, Trump's attacks, sometimes you beat up on the wrong person. He found that out when he picked on John McCain from his own party.
Yes.
So Biden could be a very interesting candidate. And
John Lewis.
And John Lewis.
Yeah.
Well, there's no one in Congress who I think I respect and just admire more than John Lewis. And I may be going back forever. Just don't tell my friend Congressman Charles Rangel that I said this. But he is the conscience of our country right now. When he speaks, he's speaking for what is right and for what is fair. And I've gotten to meet him twice in my life, and it is truly an honor.
So how do you see, not going to ask you to predict the future, but how do you see the country getting out of its, I would say, political battle? How do we come together? Any suggestions on how we come together? Politics where every side worked together and each side got something.
I think that the American public is eventually going to tire of this daily dose of acrimony and derision. And I think that at some point, President Trump leaves, either by not being reelected or if he serves two terms and leaves, that the feeling in the country would be for one of cooperation, and that we would go back to a place where there is a disagreement without all the frivolous anger and negativity and the constant accusations and always this sense of impropriety that the other side is really being governed by the devil. You know, the left did this and the left did that and that kind of thing. And to some degree, it's on both sides of the equation. And I think that that will happen probably when something occurs and there isn't the proper government response. If you remember, in the George W. Bush administration, after Hurricane Sandy, it really, Katrina. After that, the country started to realize we've got to be more together. We had a federal government that was useless, and he had a political appointee who had no idea what he was doing.
Brown.
And we got thrust into, what was his name?
Brown.
Brown, right. And he got thrust into a situation where he was way over his head. He shouldn't have been appointed. And to his credit, 2 years after he left office, President Bush went on the Oprah Winfrey show and took total responsibility for it and was actually, I thought, quite humble in his response. And I don't think we'll ever see that from this president, but I do think, and maybe even we've hit that crucible now, where people are going to start to recognize that we cannot go on this way with not only the attacks going from party to party, but now attacking our own agencies. And when they have piles of information to the contrary, and even the top officials in the administration see that, and maybe the American public will start to see it as well.
That's great. Listen, that's all the time, unfortunately, we have for this segment of Reaching Out. But you're welcome to stay. We'll do another segment.
Greg, I'm just getting warmed up over here.
This is Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237. Very special guest, former Governor David Patterson. Thank you once again for coming on Reaching Out.
Thanks for listening to Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. Join us each and every Saturday night at 7, right here on AM 970. The Answer.